Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 105. I'm Rob Wright, editor of Search Security, and I am here, as usual, once again, with my site editor, Peter Loschen. Peter, welcome back to Chernobyl.
Hi, Rob.
How are you today?
Great.
It's finally warm. I mean, it's always warm here in Chernobyl, our little podcast studio.
But outside.
But outside, it's finally warming up. It's great now that we're back from RSA. We are recording this on April 27th, Friday. We are now a full week away from RSA Conference 2018. We did part one of our discussion, our recap, after we got back to the office here, and that was last week. We had a lot of thoughts, so we wanted to break this into two parts. And I saved my sort of my big theme, my big sort of talking point, the thing that I heard most often and discussed most often. I saved that for this part. So, Peter, I know you have more thoughts. Would you like to go first, or would you you want me to go first?
I want to hear about In-N-Out Burger.
Oh, In-N-Out Burger was glorious. Let me tell you.
That's not your topic.
No, though. That was not my.
Okay,
you know me well, but that was not my number one point.
Okay,
or number one theme. It's funny because on more than one occasion I asked different people about, what do you think is the biggest theme, or what do you think is the biggest topic, or etc. Whenever I said theme, not whenever, but on a few occasions, whenever I said theme, people were kind of, I don't like the word theme, or theme's the wrong word, or I'm surprised by that because it's just something I'm so used to. So,
what did they think was a better word?
I didn't ask. That's a great question. But like, for example, I did a Q&A with SentinelOne CEO Tomer Weingarten, and we were talking about different things. And I said, "Oh, security automation's a big theme." And he said, "I don't like the word theme." And he kind of explained, hey, there's a lot of good things that are actually going on with security automation. It's not just a talking point. Yes, it gets overblown, but there are real developments happening with it. And that Q&A actually, I think it may be going live today. But so things like that. So maybe like theme kind of suggests that these things aren't happening, or that they're just talking points.
Yeah, I don't know. I think theme is a good word for that, for what you were trying to get at.
I'm sold. Well, yeah. I'll jump right into it then. The big thing I heard the most from different people that I spoke with and the different sessions that I went to was, maybe problematic isn't the right word, how challenging incident response is, and how a lot of people are kind of moving in the direction of trying to figure out how to do incident response the right way. Schneier did a talk about this, talked about security orchestration and automation, and how do you do incident response? How do you automate incident response? Basically, spoiler alert, he said, you can't. You need human elements. You may be able to do some of it here and there. And this topic, this theme, so to speak, this extends even, back a few weeks earlier when I was at the IBM Think Show. I know I did a recording on that. I recapped it for you, Peter. But that was another show that really focused on that and said, hey, this is an important part of the InfoSec industry. Not enough enterprises know how to do this. The IBM security guys were big on that. We got to figure out a way to do incident response services right, because too many times, your run-of-the-mill attack slips through, and they're going to, even the simple ones. And you got to figure out a way to limit that lateral movement, limit the exposure, address it quickly, because if you don't, within a couple hours, that attacker is then moving to other parts of your network, not just the endpoint that they compromised. And the question that a lot of companies, different companies talked about, whether it was Accenture, or whether it was, I'm trying to think now, SentinelOne or others, they talked about was, well, how do you do that? And it feels like the industry is still trying to figure that out, find the right people for it, which is, that ties into the workforce shortage, figure out what you can automate with machine learning or AI. God, heard that a lot at the show. And you know, find the right mix, the right balance. And do you outsource it? Do you have some of it in your own sock? It's complicated, and it feels like not a lot of headway, not a lot of progress has been made on that from what I've heard at the show. But, you know, at least it's a talk. You know, people are confronting it now. So important point, incident response and how we're doing it. And that was probably the number one thing that I saw in sessions and in interviews, thing that was discussed, I guess. So
I would say that there was a certain amount of homogenization of the buzzwords.
Ooh.
Not, and I should say distribution.
Mm.
They're more evenly distributed. So you talked about incident response. We can talk about vulnerability assessment or vulnerability disclosure, GDPR,
yep.
Blockchain.
Blockchain.
The thing is that...
Go. It,
this year, I could be talking to somebody, and I probably mentioned this before, but I think the thing that's sort of striking me is that
so many different people.
Everybody's talking about the same things: machine learning, artificial intelligence. Yeah. And, you know, how do you apply those to?
You mentioned that about DNS, yeah.
Yeah, but so DNS was another one of those things that sort of popped up. Encryption backdoors, but. Also, not really. So I did not really hear too much about encryption backdoors while I was at the show, but I've been hearing a lot about them in the last week or so.
Mm-hmm.
But it went across everybody, and people are also looking back. I talked to Marty Resch at Cisco.
Mm.
Now he was the person behind Snort, the old
right. Oh yeah, yeah.
And we talked about that for a while, and we talked about how it's still relevant to do that same kind of thing, where you need to have these fundamental tools, you need to have these fundamental understandings of what's going on. If you don't understand what DNS is and how TCP/IP works, then it's hard to understand how TCP/IP can be subverted through something like a BGP route hijack.
That's something you've written about
in the last week.
Yeah,
but it didn't really come up at RSA. But the thing is that stuff keeps coming at us, and the people that we expect to be experts in one little field are not necessarily going to always be restricted to that, especially as we build more and more expertise over time. I mean, the other thing that kind of strikes me is that everybody's got a product for something. I mean, there's a lot of products.
So I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the things that I heard was too many point products. It feels like you said, there's a product for everything. We're becoming over productized. Is that sort of similar to what you heard? I mean, not that it was necessarily a bad thing, but that it's, you're right. There's like point products for everything that you can imagine now.
Right. And at the same time, people are still talking about how we have to address the fundamentals, you know, the cross-site scripting vulnerabilities and the...
Well, that's never going away.
Is it? That would be sad if it never
Come
does.
On.
I mean, it would be good for
It would be good, but you know that's not going to happen.
Well,
you are the optimist, though. Like, you really believe that that's going to go away. Like OWASP, like 1 year, they're just going to be like, oh, we're taking this off the list because the majority of the companies out there don't have this problem anymore. They're all patched up. They're all good.
I think that it's going to be like a Windows XP box, that there's still going to be people who do it, who leave it open. Same with SMB V1, same with you name it, like the default login admin, those kinds of hard coding passphrases and credentials into code. I mean, all those things are bad, and we all know that they're bad. Same as we know that running a Windows XP server on your hospital's network is a bad thing. They're still there.
But those only get remedied when Microsoft says, look, 15 years is long enough. We're moving you off XP. Like, they have to force you, and I don't know how that gets... I don't know how that would work with a cross-site scripting issue or that it's not just like if you upgrade, you know it's going to be fixed. Like it can still happen.
Well, okay. So there was one snippet of a conversation that is occurring to me right now.
Yes.
And that is port 80. I mean, if I remember when there were a bunch of different ports you needed to know about, because every application, Gopher, Telnet, FTP, SSH, even HTTP, they all had, every one of those application protocols had their own port, you know, their well-known ports. So if you're blocking everything except HTTP on port 80, then everything all of a sudden becomes HTTP traffic, because that's the way you get through the firewall. So I think, you know, long term, things aren't going to, you know, we're not going to continue to remain dependent on these protocols that were designed in the 80s and 90s, for especially for applications and for transport layer. Things are going to, you know, things are going to eventually change. There's going to be things rolled out. There's going to be a lot of hoopla over the new techniques, and some of them are actually going to solve the problems. So when we get to that, there's going to be pressures because people aren't going to be doing, let's say, I'm just going to take WordPress blogs, if that's a problem, or Drupal or whatever. Either they fix themselves and make themselves secure, or we'll find some other models for doing these things that'll make them irrelevant and as outmoded in the future as when running Windows XP servers is today. But there's still Windows XP servers out there. There's probably still Windows 3.1 devices out there. I mean, who knows? I can't even imagine if there was a DOS device.
There's got to be something somewhere, even if it's just being run for testing purposes or in the background or, you know, for giggles.
But to think that still is persisting is kind of mind blowing. That 30 years ago, everything ran DOS because Windows wasn't here.
So when you, like, in the people with the people that you talked to at the show, was that something that they mentioned, that there's a lot of this old stuff that needs to be?
Well, I think the thing that comes out is, like, for example, Katie Masouris, CEO of Luda Security, that she gave a great talk, and she taught and about bug bounties. One of the things that she pointed out was that a lot of bug bounties, the bug hunters are aiming, you know, they're aiming to get paid. So they're going after the low-hanging fruit. And for a lot of these companies, if you haven't done anything at all and you start out with a bug bounty program, then all of a sudden you're going to get all these cross-site scripting vulnerabilities. You're going to get the admin vulnerabilities because nobody's actually ever looked at this. So instead of having your intern or your level one person giving them some tools, some open source tools, and saying, here, go and look and find the low-hanging fruit, that's a much better way to build your bug bounty program, according to Katie Masouris, rather than just saying, hey, everything is open. Take a more targeted approach by looking at the things that are already easy to find, so that you don't not have to pay somebody for them.
I heard the same thing, which we can discuss offline. But that's interesting. So, what about? So this is probably the second theme, topic, discussion point. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. That was prevalent, and we knew this going in. I mean, we wrote about it last year. We did a previous story about how much talk there was going to be about AI and cybersecurity, machine learning, cybersecurity. Did you hear a lot about that, or do you feel like that was less of a concentration this year?
Machine learning came up surprisingly often.
Were you expecting it to be lower? I guess I don't know what I was expecting.
I didn't expect it to be on the same level of ubiquity as GDPR or blockchain.
Yeah, it
was.
Yeah.
I mean,
still
heard. I'm working on, or I just finished a story on biometrics, where machine learning was raised as a way to help implement biometrics in a smarter way.
Right.
So, and people were mentioning biometric machine learning in a lot of different perspectives.
And it's hard to figure out what's what when different vendors, different people, different experts even talk about this stuff. Supervised versus unsupervised algorithms, and are unsupervised algorithms true AI? How do you distinguish AI versus machine learning? I will say this: I heard about it being applied in a lot more sort of specific ways, like you said, for biometrics or authentication or very specific tasks with threat detection. So I thought that was interesting. But one thing really stood out for me in this show, and it's probably not a surprise it came from Bruce Schneier, but he gave another, as he usually does, an interesting talk, and I wrote about it already. It was primarily about incident response and automation, as I said, but he talked a lot about sort of government policy. One thing he dropped at the end of that talk that really kind of resonated with me was, and I'm writing a blog post about this, but he said, if you don't understand algorithmic discrimination, you don't understand discrimination in the 21st century. And he was talking about how people need to get involved technologists need to get involved in public policy. And he was saying, wouldn't it be great if somebody with a joint computer science law degree went in to, help the ACLU, Southern Poverty Law Center, or the NAACP, and kind of taught them about things like algorithmic discrimination, which we've heard a lot about across a number of industries. And I thought that was interesting because all we ever hear, Peter, is about how positive algorithms and machine learning, how it's going to be great for InfoSec. And I feel like all we hear outside of InfoSec is how problematic these algorithms are when they're not supervised, when they're people, there aren't any people there to manage them and make sure that the bias and the discrimination that may be built in purposefully or not is causing problems. So I really thought that was interesting. And you extend that to something like biometrics. Like we've heard about biometrics like face ID, Apple X, facial recognition, the iPhone X, like it not recognizing certain ethnicities as well as it would others. And why is that? Is it the way the designers built those recognition algorithms or recognition technology or whatever you want to call it doesn't work right? It works well for certain genders. It works well for certain types of people. Who knows? But it's things like that that are really starting to concern me. And it stood out because, like I said, inside InfoSec, machine learning is all positive. You just hear about, you need to train the algorithm right, and you need to have some supervision. But after that, it's fine. And outside, the conversation's a lot more about, we built this thing. It's not flawed, but it's biased. Like, it's not broken. It's not flawed in a way that it's doing something that you didn't necessarily want it not to do. But it's biased. It's discriminating against a certain type of data or a type of person or a type of whatever you're looking for, or whatever you're looking for it to do. So I thought that was really fascinating, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of speaks to the whole concept of racial or gender privilege.
Yeah,
It works fine as long as you're gender X and race Y, but. And that's as long as you're in those categories, it's fine. But if you're not, then it's not. And I think everybody needs to understand that that's a problem, not just the people that are being that are suffering the bias.
Yeah, and you just wonder if those biases start to creep in. And let's be honest, why wouldn't they in InfoSec? what does that mean for the machine learning based technology, the AI based technology that we've invested so much in, so much time, energy, and attention? What happens when we figure out that, oh, these models that we've built, they're looking for specific things that we knew were a problem, but we've concentrated so much on those things that it's missing something else. And the attackers knew that, you know, they planned, they knew that this could happen and this would happen, and now they're sneaking around and doing this other thing that we didn't anticipate. You know, I'm a pessimist, I admit. You're nodding your head, Peter. The audience can't see you doing it. I'm a pessimist, so I do worry about these things, about how, you know, algorithmic discrimination or bias is going to creep in for InfoSec, not from a gender perspective, but just, you know, our bias and how we look at threats, flaws, vulnerabilities, what we need to do in InfoSec, and how that may come back to bite us if we don't have proper human management or supervision. So yeah, those are the two big things that really stuck with me from the show. But yeah, to your point, the sort of the confluence of all the different topics and how they are coming together, you know, whether it's a discussion around GDPR, and then also the discussion about the stuff that's outdated and the stuff that needs to be changed. I think that's, I'm hearing a lot of those things too. So it's good to know that we can reinforce, I guess, each other's perspective. Although occasionally we like to challenge each other. You're nodding.
Yeah. Okay. I that's a good.
Any other closing thoughts?
Just can't wait for next year.
Yeah, it was a long one. I mean, like you said last time, you felt like it was a little bit easier to get around. I do wonder what it's going to be like next year. Show's only getting bigger.
Yeah.
Show's only getting bigger, and that space is only getting more chaotic. So, but we'll see, for example, how they do with representation, with women speakers for keynotes. I expect there to be some progress made. Do you want to make a prediction? Should we close our RSA podcast, you know, our RSA recap podcast, part two, with a prediction, an expectation, a wager, perhaps? Do you think they're going to have more
than 20% women keynote speakers?
Well, they didn't really have 20%.
No, I know.
Yeah.
Do you think they will?
Oh, do I think you're setting the bar?
I
got to believe that yes, they will. And again, I'm a pessimist, but they can't have less than 20, right? I mean,
sure.
Given the number of keynote slots that they have?
Yes.
They got to have at least 20, right?
20%. Well, that's I think that I mean,
what do you
believe? That's a number that I would like to see. I think they could easily have more than 20%.
Right, but what do you believe? Speakers. What do you expect?
I don't expect them to be much more than 25% next year.
So you think they'll meet 20? They'll be at least 20, but that's about it.
They were about 20%.
Yeah, you but know, that's, there's some trickiness there, yeah, the way they counted that this year.
Exactly. I think,
and they added keynotes. You don't have to rehash all of that, but
right. Yeah, keynote at 4:45 on Friday afternoon is not really
not great times. I mean, but yeah, they added a lot of stuff after the fact when our SA, our security advocates popped up. So
yeah, I mean, I'd like to see there be more than 25% women speakers next year.
But you don't
as keynotes. That. I don't anticipate that will happen.
Fair.
As far as representation in the sessions,
yeah.
I don't know what the number was this year.
It was around 20, between 15 and 20, if I remember. It was the one significant, but not great.
Yeah, and the thing is that the presentations that I went to that were presented by women were, I would say, more memorable than the ones that were given by the men that I went to.
You're going to get some angry emails. Shrug.
Sure. Don't have to read them.
Yeah, that's true. I think you're probably right. I think they've got to be smart about this, right? It'll be interesting to see if our essay has a second show. They should. I mean, it looked like it was a success, and you know, maybe we will sit down at a later date and discuss that one. I know Maddie Bacon, our assistant site editor, covered that remotely while we were in the throes of the RSA. And there was a lot of interesting content there, and people seemed to really have a very high opinion of how that show went. I haven't caught a lot of it myself because we've been busy with RSA brain dumps and getting all of our content online. But yeah, no. So I think you and I are on the same page. More than 20, but that's about it. Not 25. Slightly over 20.
I think, and one of the things that I don't know where I heard this first, but it was a while ago, like many years ago. But one of the indicators that a group has achieved sort of parity with other groups, if you're talking about diversity and right. so on, is when it's okay for people in that, for you to hire or select people from that group, even if they're a little bit on the mediocre side. Because there's plenty of people in the majority who are relatively, who are not at the very top. They're not at the tip top.
Sure.
Right?
I mean, look at us.
Exactly. Exactly. But that's the thing. If you can point to people and say, here are people who are at all levels the same as the dominant group, who are represented at all different levels of skill and adeptness, then you're no longer saying, well, the only way that I can hire somebody from this out group to be on my team is if they're exceptional.
Yeah.
Because not everybody on your team who's part of the dominant group is necessarily exceptional.
Yeah.
And if you make that rule just for people outside, then you're obviously discriminating.
Yeah, that's lame.
So, yeah. I mean, I'd like to be able to go to any session, any keynote, and have the same odds of seeing somebody who's average, no matter what their group.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, dare to dream. But we'll see. 20%. Let's see if it holds.
Yeah, I'd like to see much higher, but and
yeah,
they, and but, they could.
But we're setting our expectations. I know you've said that repeatedly. We know. I'm with you. I want to see more, too. But we're setting our expectations low. We don't want to overdo this because it wasn't great. I mean, there was one until RSA was like, oh, there's criticism. We should probably fix that. 20%. We'll see. That's our expectation. Okay. Peter?
Rob.
We survived RSA.
We did.
Thank you for sitting in with me on part two of this discussion.
Always happy to do it.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Search Security. I'm Rob Wright, and we will see you next time.